Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Happy, happy Halloween, Halloween, Halloween. Happy, happy Halloween, Silver Shamrock. Happy, happy Halloween, Halloween, Halloween. Happy, happy Halloween.
Hello! Sorry, I couldn't resist. Hello, welcome back to Bretton Cliff's Flea Circus, a Halloween edition. We're recording this before Halloween, but it will be out on Halloween, and we're going to talk about a film called Halloween, so it couldn't get more Halloween. You've just heard a little taster of what the film is all about that we're going to talk about later, but before that, hello Brett, lovely to see you. How are you doing?
Hello, I'm fine. Was that supposed to be a ghost, that noise?
Or an old Irish lady?
Yeah, I thought it was an old Irish lady. I thought that's what it was. Certainly, it wasn't very scary, was it?
Oh, well, I don't know. Scared.
Hello! You sound like Mrs. Doubtfire.
Old Scottish lady, whatever. Is she meant to be Scottish?
Scottish, I think.
I haven't seen Mrs. Doubtfire. All I've seen is that poster that you put on the...
and that's frightening enough, isn't it? That's frightening enough, that thing.
Yes, yeah, so I thought puppets. It was a horror, so I thought I thought I'd go with it. Anyway, scaredness is in that the eyes and ears of the receiver.
The recipient. The ears and eyes of the recipient.
Yeah, there might be somebody who's scared of it. Who are you to dictate that?
I'm sure there was. I'm sure there's people terrified of Miss Doubtfire. Definitely. It is quite scary, really, when you think about it.
I've already seen it once. I think it's... is it about subterfuge?
I'll tell you who should have been terrified of Mrs. Doubtfire. The kids in Mrs. Doubtfire, because it was her dad dressed up as a woman. What's he playing at?
Is he... So what's happening? The split up?
The split up?
Tell us what it is, because honestly, I haven't seen it since it first came out.
Well, I don't think I have either. But
he puts a cake on his face.
He plays football. That's all I remember about it.
But he's Pierce Brosnan, right?
And he wants to spend. Yeah, he wants to spend more time with his kids, and they need a nanny or something like that. So the only way he can get to see his kids is by dressing up as a Scottish nanny and conning his whole family.
Why did they split up? Did they split up because he's a fantasist?
Complete fantasist, exactly.
As in the film, and I can't remember, maybe you can't remember, listeners can tell us, in the film, has Pierce Brosnan, I don't like him, I don't find him very likable, but has he actually done anything wrong? Or is Williams just wanting him out of the picture?
I can't remember if he's done anything wrong apart from the fact that obviously he's a handsome man and Williams resents that. So he dresses up as a woman.
Who's the wife?
Try and get him out. Is it Sally Field?
Is it Sally Field? I feel like as they would might say these days, she's punching with with Pierce Brosnan. He must be about 30 years younger than
her. I know. I don't know how they work this out. I've got no idea. Do you think Mrs. Doubtfire has got like previous history of dressing up, and that's why they've split up?
I think
like,
there's a good.
His previous outfit was a malicious ghost or something. Like you at the start.
I think he just keeps bringing out this character at inopportune moments, and the wife's just totally sick of him. Like funerals and stuff like that. You know, try and lighten the mood by dressing up as a Scottish nanny.
Yeah. And at the end, doesn't he get his own TV show as Mrs. Doubtfire or something like that?
I've got no idea about that, but that seems ridiculous. Oh. Has he always got cake on his face when he does it?
Right, and plays football.
I'm an old Scottish lady.
But he disciplines the kids, doesn't he? That's what he does, as Mrs. Doubtfire. Like, he's carefree as himself, but when he dons the Mrs. Doubtfire outfit, he suddenly becomes
a
tyrant.
He's not a fun nanny.
I think he's fun and firm.
Is he bringing the slipper out a lot?
He is. Oh, the belt. I was never hit with a belt or anything like that.
I wasn't alluding to us being attacked by a belt.
My dad would always frighten us by just getting the belt and like snapping it together like that and making a noise. It was terrifying.
Good noise, that. Actually, before we go on, I've got a really something very serious to say. Last week I misspoke.
Have you?
Last week I misspoke when I said I had dirty, dusty, fluffy floss. Uh-huh. I would just like to point out that that was an error on my part. And actually, the floors are extremely clean. What I would say in my defense,
I thought you might get in trouble.
We have tiled floors and a cat. Mm-hmm. It doesn't take long for a little bit of fluff to build up, but it is cleaned very rapidly, very frequently.
And regularly. Okay?
I just want to put this matter behind us now, and hopefully we can all move on.
Let's hope so. Well, this week, because it's Halloween, I allowed my the wife to wax me back. And that...
What's it got to do with Halloween?
Well, because it was terrifying for me. I've had it done before. It doesn't get any better.
You had your legs done for charity, didn't you?
I did have my legs done for charity. Remember that. That's right. Uh-huh. Aye.
I remember you sliding down some stairs at great speed because of your smooth legs.
Yeah. You should have heard the profanity that was coming out of me mouth.
Oh, no.
I know. I've never called the wife those things before, but some terrible things came out of me mouth. No. It was awful.
How's your back?
It's very, very smooth.
Is it? That's good. It is. And who's benefiting of the smoothness?
Well, I suppose I'm benefiting in a way. I'm free to take off me top at swimming pools or whatever, or the baths, as we like to call it, without feeling conscious of me gorilla type back.
I had no idea you had a very hairy back.
I have, like, they look like wings on me back. They only just started recently, I would say in the past 10 years, sprouting. But you'll get them, don't you worry.
I've got very fair hair. I don't think I will. I might. Yeah. It's more like downy. I think on mine, very soft.
Like Robert Downey Jr.'s hair.
No, more like a little area that children would like to play in. So soft.
Yeah, that's what you want, isn't it?
That's what Robert Downey Jr. would want. I've been watching The Fast Show again. And we keep talking about it over messaging each other about it.
Yeah.
But it's brought a lot of joy into my life over the last week, like when I've had stressful days and stuff. And I'm watching the Fishing, the greatest show on TV of all time, obviously. After watching The Fishing, it made us want to watch it again. And just, again, nostalgic, just took us back to being in. Well, we would have been at school when it was on, wouldn't we? Just brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Laughing, like we said before, not every sketch is brilliant, but pretty much every one of Paul Whitehouse's characters are like borderline genius. But so good.
Yeah, they are.
Gino Ginelli.
Gino Ginelli?
Yeah, you remember that?
Who's that? No.
It was ice cream. That was the advert from ice cream.
I can't remember.
I had some
buying advert for ice cream.
I had some Italian ice cream, or like they call it, gelato, today. And I saw, like, here in my head was the song from the advert from the 90s. Gino, oh, Gino, Ginelli. And I think there was mint chocolate chip, and that was what I was having.
I can't remember that advert at all. I think you're making it up.
No, that's what I read. It's a real thing.
I was going to ask you, when was the first time that you saw a pumpkin in the flesh? Now, the reason I asked this, right, is because when we were kids, when we were kids, we didn't have pumpkins, did we?
No.
We had the turnip.
Or a snadgy.
A snadgy. We did. So pumpkins are a relatively kind of recent thing, aren't they?
Certainly weren't popular or seen at all in the northeast of England. It might have been what was carved in American stuff, and that was on films, and well, obviously in films, like,
yeah,
we're going to talk about today, but like, it was just carving turnips, wasn't it? Or Swedes, I would have said, actually, turnips. Not turnips.
Yeah, I would say turnips. I always remember the smell of the turnip, because you'd stick a candle in there.
Yeah.
And, you know, it smell love. I don't like turnip personally, but it used to smell lush, didn't it?
Yeah, did he ever partake in snadgy kicking?
Well, that, no, I was the victim of snadgy kicking. Yes.
Your snadgy was kicked.
It was. I was devastated. I went out trick-or-treating when I was very young with my sister. It was one of the rare times that we're allowed, sort of, you know, away from the street or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we had a very successful trick-or-treating sort of time. Bags were full with sweets and money. Shit like that.
Wonderful time.
These bigger boys came from nowhere, just out the darkness, and kicked the snadgy, and we were devastated. I had to go home really? After that. Aye.
That's shocking. What were you dressed as?
Who are these people that get themselves involved in snadgy kicking?
I know. I mean, what drives someone? What drives someone?
What drives someone to do exactly? It's disgraceful, isn't it?
What was your
behavior?
On that I think
it was, you know, Alan Partridge when he's dressed up as the zombie.
Yeah.
It's very similar to that. I think me mum put flour and water on me face to make like a crumbling zombie face. I don't know if I had the shower curtain, but I might have done.
One of the few times I dressed up for Halloween, I recreated that outfit.
What's your first memory of Fair Halloween then?
I think, I don't know, first memory, but I remember like Halloween and Bonfire Night are kind of like quite nostalgic memories because,
yeah,
obviously, like trick or treating, it was something that you, well, it was very different, wasn't it? Like, you never did anything like that for 364 days of the year. Then all of a sudden, you're knocking on people's houses. Like,
I think we were the first generation to do that. Obviously, we're parents. I don't think did anything like that, did they? Trick or treat?
I don't
think
so. Not from where we're from, I think. But I remember we used to go to the just the neighbours, like, even not even like the full length of the street, just the ones near our house. Get some sweets and get some pieces and that. I think I remember going to the Gleedon Park Community Centre for a Halloween party once, where they were bobbing for apples and stuff like that. But I mean, the outfits now, I mean, it's just like whatever, like sexy petrol attendant and stuff like that. At the time, it was like a black bag, like with two holes cut out, and three holes so your arms and head could come out the top. Like,
it was.
Like a
whatever
plastic
you
mask.
Could make at home, wasn't it?
Yeah, sometimes a plastic mask. You used to have a devil one.
Aye. Or them witches' fingers that glue in the dark.
They're awful, aren't they? I really hate them.
Yeah. them plastic vampire teeth that rip your gums apart. Yeah.
Like, they're too hard, the material that's made with is too hard for a child's gums to bear.
Yeah. They were. I mean, they were almost like torturing themselves, weren't they? Bleeding gums after it.
Should we tell people what we're talking about? Because we're not just talking about the film Halloween, which is what we've alluded to.
Uh-huh.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. We're talking about the second best Halloween ever made. In my opinion, anyway. We're talking about Halloween 3, Season of the Witch.
Yeah. Yep.
Which is batshit crazy, isn't
how
it?
How many?
Batshit.
How many Halloween films are there?
Too many. That's what I'd say.
I saw the one with old Jimmy Lee Curtis on a plane. Well, I was on a plane. She's on a plane in the film.
You mean the newer one?
I think that's the last one that was made, I think.
Yeah, like the reboot one. I forget.
It's pretty good.
It was all right. I didn't mind that one.
She's like tooled up, isn't she? Like she got loads of guns. She's an expert marksman.
She's preparing for Michael Myers' return, isn't she? That's what she's doing. Mm-hmm. She's prepared all these years and stuff like that for him to come back. It's good. I think that one ignores most of the sequels, isn't it?
And, yes.
Pretends like they don't have a lot. Yeah. Especially the one with Busta Rhymes. That one definitely hasn't happened.
I love
I mean, fucking hell, what's all that about, man?
I mean, that's like Leprechaun-style stuff, isn't it?
It is.
So Halloween 2, so Halloween, we're back on John Carpenter, right? So it's a John Carpenter double bill.
Well, kind of.
Kind of. He produces this, but it wouldn't be made if it wasn't for the first one, which is John Carpenter.
Yeah.
Which was groundbreaking. It kind of invented the slasher movie. The sequel, Halloween 2, what's your thoughts on that one?
It's all right. I think John Carpenter wrote that one. He didn't direct it or anything like that because he didn't want to do any sequels at the time and stuff. But it's okay.
I think it's okay.
Obviously, it's not as good as Halloween. You know, it's not as good as the original. But it's still okay.
Yeah, I think that's it's all right. But then with the
and
third
then he
one.
Dies. Well, then then Michael Myers dies, doesn't he? In the second one. So what do they do next? So the idea is, from John Carpenter, we'll do like an anthology where every Halloween will bring out a film with the name of Halloween, but it'll be a different story.
Yeah.
So it'll be a story told around sort of Halloween. This was the first idea of that. This is the first time to try to do it.
And it'll be in the same kind of universe, but not the same storyline or same people or characters within it. And people thought, what a fucking stupid idea that is. And nobody went for it. And now every single program that gets made is that idea.
Like that. I mean, you look at that American Horror Story or whatever, that's just nicked that idea, hasn't it? Completely.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that was one of the first ones to do it.
If they did it now, it would be massive, wouldn't it? It's just because people at the time, if the title was Halloween, they wanted to see Michael Myers. Well, and Michael Myers is nowhere to be seen in this film, apart from on the telly.
Yeah, he's on the telly. Then what I particularly like is by Halloween 4, the return of Michael Myers, they've gone, oh, fuck it, let's just get Michael Myers back in.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, people were expecting it to go to see this film and you know, for it to be a film where Michael Myers was in it, because they didn't do any sort of promos or anything like that. All the trailers and stuff for the film sort of indicated that Michael Myers would be in it in some way, and he wasn't. So people, when they went to see the film, what's this?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I mean, they started, it's totally different.
Like booing the film in the cinemas and stuff like that, and they started, you know, just rebelling against the film completely. And I mean, it's not without its flaws, this film, but I still think it's great. I love it.
I enjoyed it. I'm very confused by parts of it, which we'll get to. But I think it's great, but it's just not the same. Like it's almost like they're taking the piss out of Halloween.
Yeah.
In a way, but it's a totally different kind of film. It's not a slasher film with a murderer picking people off.
No.
It's that's not what it is. People would have not only been like kind of, oh, it's not Michael Myers then. It's not even anything like they would have been expecting. It's like got this weird occult sci-fi. It's strange, but we'll get on to what all of that stuff. So it's from 1982. It's the third in the series. This one's directed by Tommy Lee Wallace.
Yeah.
We've still got our main man on cinematography. That's right,
yeah,
isn't
Dean
it?
Cundey.
Dean Cundey's right, still yes, there. Mm-hmm. Produced by John Carpenter and Deborah Hill.
That's right, and sort of partly written as well by them, because originally the story was by a guy called Nigel Neal, who did like the quarter mass experiment and stuff like that. There was old sort of Hammer films and ones that used to be on the BBC as TV shows and stuff. And Carpenter was like a massive fan of him, so it's like very folk horror-y and stuff from him.
Yeah, it is.
But he, once he realised that they wanted to put loads of gore and violence and stuff like that into the film, he just said, no, okay. Take my name
off.
So
taking his idea.
So like, yeah, so like most of the ideas, his, John Carpenter did like a sort of rewrite of it, and so did the director as well, Tommy Lee Wallace. But Carpenter doesn't get like a mention in the titles or anything like that for writing it. Neither does Nigel Neal. Nope. It's all like written and directed by Tommy Lee Wallace.
Okay. Because you can see like the folk horror kind of stuff. You can see where that Quartermass Experiment guy and this British, very British kind of folk horror theme is in the film, but obviously it's transported to California or somewhere, and it's not that setting, but the themes kind of are there. But I think for me, this is what's really confusing about it, or it loses. I did enjoy the film, but it really loses its focus, I think, because it's essentially it's got two things going on. Yes, I've got the sock on my hand.
No, what the fuck's that? He turned into that wrestler with the sock on his hand.
Yeah,
what was his name? Mick Foley.
Yeah, that's him. But I think it loses its focus because there's two kind of things going hand in hand. And I think it only partly works. Even like with a little bit of retrospective.
Well, I think not as bad as with me, it's definitely not as bad as people think. I definitely don't think that. I think people have kind of revisited it over time and stuff, and it's become like a cult film, hasn't it? But I've probably got the benefit of seeing it sort of a number of times, I think. Obviously, the involvement of Carpenter and that, I'm a massive fan. And his music's amazing in this. It's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah,
from like the titles.
The titles are superb.
The titles are like synchronized, aren't they? They're synchronized. You see like this pumpkin being made on the screen through electronics, and the music synchronized with that, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's like a really early like kind of home computer game kind of like loading up is what it's like. Or they're creating this visual. And the music's in time with this pumpkin visual being made, like piece of code by piece of code. I just think it's great. It's a great opening. And actually the opening scene, I think, is really strong as well. I don't know if you want to like go into like the what happens in it.
Well, the mental plot. The mental plot.
All right, so I've never seen it before. So here's my my quick rundown of the beginning. You've got this great opening music, and it's quite futuristic. It's very synthy, like John Carpenter music always is. It's recognizable as his stuff. And then you've got a guy, an old fella, running away down this dark road, trying to get away from a car that's slowly following him. And he goes to like a motel, I think.
A gas station.
He goes to a gas station and he's hiding. He thinks he's got away from whoever's following him in this car. And it turns out it's like this really smartly dressed young man.
Yeah.
I'm going to say a little bit like your typical Jehovah's Witness outfit. And he's been followed by... It is. I'm not joking.
Do you think?
That's what I think it is.
I think he's... I just think he's like a business version of the shape of Halloween. That's what I think. Okay. I think that's what they are.
Business.
That's just my opinion. I like the way that you went for Jehovah's Witnesses, though.
Well, he's been chased by a very smart young man. He catches up with him, and he just overpowers him and starts strangling him on the floor. And the old fella manages to pull this chain, which is it's stopping a car from moving. And he pulls it away and the car starts slowly rolling towards them. And I mean, it's about a minute into the film and I've laughed out loud at what's happened. And I'm not sure whether I meant to or not. It's because this car just slowly moves towards this guy. He's pinned this fella down on the floor and he's strangling him. And the car's going really slowly towards him. And he just looks at it. He just gets crushed in between these two cars. And it goes like, da-da! And he's just like really... The car's going so slowly. It's a really gentle crush.
it's John Carpenter's use of music, isn't it? He does quite a lot, which is used. I love it. I love the fact that he uses it because when it's done properly and stuff like that, it's really jarring. But I think it's used a little bit too much in this film.
I think it is because you've got that. The music's great, like the opening music, like I said. But when you see these bad guys... suited men, there's this really piercing like like it's the kind of like electronic horror score that is that people take the piss out of, like Garth Marenghi and stuff like that. It's like it's one of those hallmarks that people like poke fun at, and it's this is probably like the originator of it.
Maybe. I think it's good, like I've just said there, when it's used kind of sparingly, because there's a part in The Thing where it's used to like massive effect and it terrifies you, but it's only used once, do you know what I mean? And this, it's used a lot, so it's definitely overdone. But it's like a weird mix of, it's like a melting pot of everything in this film, isn't it? It's just everything thrown in. And I think that the folk horror-y stuff and stuff, it's prevalent definitely in the film because there's a large part of it that has to do with Stonehenge, which is like a blink and you miss it kind of thing on the TV.
But
where a part of Stonehenge has been sort of stolen. Know, this is a massive part of the film.
You don't need this part of the film. It doesn't need it. The actual plot of the film... like Stonehenge doesn't need to come into it. It doesn't.
Well, it does because the need Stonehenge because of its mystical powers, right? And right, what they're doing with very small particles of Stonehenge is putting it inside microchips of Halloween masks.
No, but they could have just. I mean, that's ridiculous. Isn't
it is. It is. But I think it's also. Absolutely fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. It's just so mental. It's batshit crazy.
Right, let's go back.
Right.
This fella escapes, but he gets taken to hospital and he just keeps saying, they're going to kill us. They're going to kill us.
Yeah.
And nobody knows what he's on about. He's obviously been traumatized. There's a semi-drunk doctor that you see going home. His ex-wife shouting at him because he's like late and he's pissed to see his kids. And he takes them a Halloween mask.
Now we should say that this is Tom Atkins, who is absolutely amazing in this film.
Yeah,
he's absolutely class.
I mean,
he's the sleaziest man. In the whole world, he's the sleaziest.
I've got that written down. I've actually got notes for this one, so I've got like one of the things I've written down is straight in with a kiss, but we'll get to that. So,
Tom Atkins, he kind of goes home to give his children a sort of Halloween mask, and he brings them in like a ratty. Brown.
He brings like a really crap one, and they're busy watching this TV ad for by Silver Shamrock. This TV ad, which plays all the way through the film, and is the main protagonist of the film, is this ad, and it's so annoying.
Yeah.
That's what we played at the beginning of the show, is that tune. 8 days to Halloween, and all of these kids are like glued to the TV singing along with it. And the dad's like brought them these masks, and the mom's like, You fucking idiot. I've already, they've obviously got these ones that they tell you what, these fucking really terrifying. Whoever the wardrobe guy is who made these masks are like spot on, because there's a pumpkin one, a witch one, and I can't remember what the third one. I don't think you want to see it. Skeleton, yeah,
it's skeleton, yeah.
When
the film came out as well, you could actually buy those masks.
Oh, could you?
Okay. I mean, that must be worth quite a bit of money now.
Yeah,
I certainly haven't seen any of them, but they're proper latex things, aren't they? I mean, they're not like those cheap ones, plastic ones that we used to have.
Yeah. So when he's home, he gets a phone call from the hospital saying he needs to go back in because our man who's been strangled has been taken in. He's in a bad way. And he keeps saying they're all going to come and kill us. So anyway, a well-dressed man does actually make his way into this fella's hospital room and pulls the front of his face off through his eyes.
Yeah. It's brutal, that, isn't it?
It's horrible.
I mean, what a way to kill someone.
I don't think you're prepared for that. It's really not gory because there's not loads of blood, but it's really shocking. It's really, really shocking.
It
he sticks his fingers in his eyes and, like, it a bowling ball pulls his face off. And then they the bloke's daughter comes in to identify the body and they're like, prepare yourself. And they don't tell her.
Yeah.
And then she's like, oh.
They show the man's face.
Her reaction is not enough.
It's not. Prior to this, we also get some more Tom Atkins sleaze as he's talking to the nurse and stuff like that, and asking her if she wants to lie down with him and stuff like that, and keeps patting her on the arse.
It's mad, isn't it? Like
batshit.
He's a character that's painted as a really bad man from the start. Uh-huh. Like when he takes the phone call to go into work, he's estranged wife goes, doctoring while drunk.
Yeah.
And she's like, what a great role model or something like that. And he's like, he's just whatever.
So Tom Atkins kind of strikes up a kind of, you know, a relation, a very small relationship with the daughter of the guy that's been killed, isn't he? And he decides to go off on a kind of road trip to find out why or where the father's been. On the way, right, he takes road beers as well while he's ditching his kids. He's on the phone going, no, I kind of come, no, something's come up at work. Yeah. And then he puts the phone down and picks up like a six pack of Miller or whatever to take with this woman on this road trip. What an ultimate sleaze guy. I love him.
So what? So basically the daughter's like, something's fishy here. Something's going on. I've been looking into it. And last time anybody's seen him was when he went to pick up, so he runs a fucking joke shop. So he's stocking Halloween outfits, costumes. And he's got all of these masks and they're the biggest seller. Everybody wants them because of this ad playing everywhere.
Yeah.
So all the way through the film, everywhere anybody goes, this ad is on in the TV or on the radio or whatever, with this the sinister pumpkin motif.
Yeah.
So Atkins is already sick of it anyway because he's been shamed by not buying his kids the masks. And the daughter's like, something's not right here. The last time anybody saw him was when he went to this weird small town where these masks are made. Why don't we go and check it out? And he's like, yeah, I mean, I've got nothing else to do other than look after my kids at Halloween, which I've been promising them. And you know, I'm a doctor. And I was on call only last night, but yeah, I'll come with you to find out, even though there's absolutely no reason for him to do it.
Yeah, you know why he does it, though.
I know why he does it, because he's got some road beers, and he's like, as soon as they get to the town, he's like, oh, there's the factory, we should go in. And he says, I think we should book a motel room first, pretend we're husband and wife, and then we've got somewhere to talk in private.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, like Tom Atkins isn't the only person that's guilty of this, because the daughter also brings sexy lingerie on an investigation to to find the murderer of her father, whose face has just been crushed and she's just seen.
Yeah.
And as soon as they get to the hotel, they're straight in.
It's instant. He goes out to fucking buy a beer or something. So he goes to a bar. While he's in the bar, she comes out of the shower. I mean, you've got to have a steamy shower scene in a slasher flick, haven't you? So she like comes out of the shower and she's like getting a towel around her. And I'm thinking, oh, like this normally spells bad times for ladies in these kind of films. And I'm thinking Atkins is going to make a move here, and I'm not sure, or she's just going to get attacked. By the time he gets back, she slipped into these like slinky undies, and they're just that's it. They're together. Yeah. They've known each other. They only know each other because he failed to keep her dad alive. That's the only reason they know each other.
And this sex scene so uncomfortable as well, isn't it? I mean, the first thing Tom Atkins does, the first thing he does is just sink a breast into his mouth. I mean, it's so weird and like it's just odd, isn't it?
It's also it's really odd. Also very influential.
Didn't you ask me a couple of weeks to do the very same thing to you? Mm-hmm. the reason why they've done that, right, is the actress who, I think it's Ellie who played Ellie, she had a no nipple clause in a contract. So how do you sort that out?
Just
put it straight
into
Tom Atkins' mouth. So I think that's the reason that they did that. But while this sex scene's going on, there's a lady next door who is unwittingly messing around with a microchip. Isn't it?
And it's,
we don't know anything about, I mean, we know a little bit that Stonehenge has been of raided and a part of it's been pinched, but we don't know why. But she's messing around with this microchip.
So very, very like classic or very clever John Carpenter style. Because Atkins is in a bar all the time, and there's always a TV on in the bar that he's in.
Yeah,
there's always like an opportunity wherever he is, his TV's playing. So there's always like an opportunity to show some stuff that's part of the plot. So one of the great things is, and it's just a little bit after this, but there's an advert for the Halloween. The movie is going to be on the TV in Halloween in the film. So this film is the third in the series of Halloween films, but is acknowledging that the first Halloween film with Michael Myers is a work of fiction in this world. I just thought that was really clever that that's in there. And that's, like you say, that's when you see the pumpkin on the screen and Michael Myers and Jimmy Lee Curtis.
It's like a nod to the first film, isn't it?
Yeah. There's no chance he's going to be in it because we're telling you that in this film, that was just a film. So he's never popping up in it.
No, exactly. That's it. So it sets the ground rules there, I guess, even though in the trailers and stuff like that.
And one of the other things is on this news thing, you say there's a little news clip saying that part of Stonehenge has gone missing. And that's all we know. So at the moment, we don't know anything other than there's some like sinister, like well-dressed men chasing people, and this advert is being played constantly, and there's obviously something to do with this advert.
And it's somehow connected to these masks, isn't it, because the guy was clutching a mask or whatever.
Yeah,
so that the silver shamrock sort of label drops off a mask of the lady who's next door, and what she does is foolishly she sort of pokes it with like a hairpin or whatever, and it shoots a laser out in her face.
Yeah, it does, and leaves her with no flesh around the nose and mouth area of her face, just exposing.
Now, Cliff, that's bad enough, innit? But what could be even worse, right, than being shot in the face by a laser?
Think of anything.
Insects coming out of that hole. This horrible spider suddenly appears from our face.
Out of her mouth,
It's mental stuff.
So this is where we start getting into the goings on, because What's the name of the guy who runs the factory called? Kanalki?
Mr. Cochran.
Cochran, I think, isn't it?
Cochran.
So he's the guy who runs the Silver Shamrock factory. He's the main player in this town, an impresario. Also, another thing is there's a curfew. So these guys have gone to the town. Yeah. And then there's like speakers going at 6 p.m., the curfew. Yeah. And that's Jamie Lee Curtis's voice, I think, who does that.
Yeah, it is. And later on as well, on the telephone, it's her voice as well.
So, I mean, they don't really explain why you've got to go inside at 6 o'clock, but no, anyway, they do it.
Actually, as they do that as well, there's a scene where they're saying it's the curfew or whatever, and then it kind of jumps to Tom Atkins going to buy, like, loads of whiskey. So the shop's still open. What's it still open for? There's a curfew.
Like, fucking hell. It's 10 to 6, I better get me whiskey in to get back to that motel. And then when he gets back, she's waiting for him in her lingerie.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a great night for him, isn't it? Like,
fantastic.
Guaranteed action from 6 p.m., whether it be whiskey-based or breast-based. Yeah. He's got it all going on. So basically, they hear the commotion from next door. Her face is shot off and there's fucking insects coming out of it. And they go, don't worry, Mr. Cochran's will be along soon enough. And Atkins doesn't say anything. He doesn't say, well, why is the man who runs a factory coming and is like, look at this? He doesn't say, I'm a doctor. Let me have a look. He's not interested in that.
I think he does say he's a doctor when they're wheeling away. I think he does say that, actually. So you might have missed that bit. He does say that.
Okay.
But, I mean, that does happen. And Mr. Cochran sort of says, well, we've got, you know, a fantastic surgery out there at the factory and stuff like that. She'll be in the best hands. And then he goes to, like, his cohorts and stuff like that. These people are in the suits. Well, what happened? And they go, it was a misfire. And, like, Tom Atkins, like, overhears this and goes back to the hotel. What do they mean, a misfire? So then they try and go and investigate the factory after this, don't they? What I haven't mentioned is the most annoying American family with that kid as well.
Again, classic. Like Carpenter poking fun at like American consumerism and all of that, isn't it? Like it's just
definitely that's what it is, yeah, for sure.
All of these, like, he just does this a lot. I know we're saying he didn't actually get the writing credit on this, but the inclusion of that family is pure John Carpenter, I think. Anyway, yeah, they're really annoying. They're in the motel.
Certainly to take the piss out of.
Yeah, and they want to go to the factory to see where these masks are made.
Mm-hmm.
And they, after their night of passion, rudely interrupted by a woman getting her face shot off by a laser, they decide to tag along and go and have a look. Mr. Cochran is absolutely world class in this film. He is so good. He's another like classic.
He's a good buddy,
isn't he? Oh, he's amazing. I don't care about what he's doing.
Yeah.
I've got no problem with these actions, to be honest.
I like his monologue when he does explain what he's doing. Yeah. It's absolutely fantastic. And in fitting with the whole of the stuff that's gone on throughout the film and stuff. But the only other time I've seen him is in RoboCop.
Well, this is where it gets a bit confusing. So they're in the factory after this, and basically there's loads of experiments going on. There's robots.
Mm-hmm.
There's Stonehenge, you get to find out that.
Well, hang on, you've jumped the gun a bit there with the robots, haven't you? Because we do learn eventually that these henchmen, that Cochran's henchmen, are robots, aren't they? The androids, that he's made.
I mean, it's mental.
So that these, so these guys, the guy at the start who crushed someone's head, he was a robot. He's got all these kind of androids around him and stuff like that. He'll do his bidding and things like that. Who also, if ever they get injured, start squirting orange juice everywhere.
Yeah, it's weird.
So Tom Atkins they go to the factory and stuff like that to investigate what's going on. I think they find the father's car or something like that. And then Ellie gets kidnapped. So then he's got to go back to the factory and he gets kidnapped himself. after discovering that the robots. Did you like that other kind of mechanical thing that was knitting?
The old lady, the scary, weird old woman that definitely didn't look real, but he was going, where is she? And then that he knocked the head off.
That's the one. It's a bit creepy, that one.
It's terrifying. Uh-huh. And then did he pull her stomach out and it was all orange juice?
No, that was the android people. So the sort of nondescript kind of people in the suits or whatever, they're all the androids, aren't they? Who kind of do his bidding and stuff like that. And he beats one up and realizes that they're robots.
He puts his hands into the stomach. Like, why would you? Yeah. What's he doing that for?
I don't know. I can't explain that.
Like, I've overpowered him now. What will I do? Yeah, I'll try and insert my hand into his fucking stomach.
Maybe he found the weak spot. That might have been the robot's weak spot. So then Cochrane's kind of in a James Bond style reveals his plan.
Yeah. Tells him all about it.
He does. He tells him all about it. And the plan is completely insane. What he plans to do is kill all the children who are wearing these Halloween masks, because he's actually a witch, Cochrane. He's a warlock, right? And the way he wants to do this is by sprinkling particles of the Stonehenge into the microchips on these masks, which will then, once triggered from this advert that we've been seeing, sort of loads and loads and loads of Silver Shamrock advert, all the kids in America and possibly throughout the world, wherever they sell the masks, will, the heads will explode and snakes and cockroaches will come out.
Why does he want to kill the kids?
Why does he want to? He explains why he wants to kill the kids.
I'm asking you, why does he want to kill them?
He just says, well, why not?
Yeah, he says, why wouldn't I? Well, the actors are like tied up. Why would you want to do this? He just goes, well, why wouldn't I?
Yeah, why wouldn't I? I'm Irish. And it just gets even crazier from there, doesn't it?
Well, this is what I have not issues with, because I did enjoy it, but I just don't think you need these layers. Like, he could just be an evil man in charge of a kid's thing that, these costumes that hates kids. So the point is that he feels like the real meaning of Halloween's been lost, right? Because it's only meant to be about the veil between the real world and the living world and the dead world. But now it's all about consumerism and adverts and masks and costumes. So he could just...
That's right,
He could just be a bitter, like, old man that hates the way that's going and make microchips that react when the ads played and do whatever to the kids. There doesn't need to be Stonehenge, and they just need to sprinkle elements of it in. They don't need to have snakes coming out of their mouths when the mask melts around their face. Like, but I just don't think it's necessary.
Where's the fun in that?
Where's
the fun in that? You see, that's why I like this one, because it does just do mental stuff. Mental stuff just does happen.
I
think it's because of obviously the fact that, you know, it was wrote by three different people, and obviously we've got this Stonehenge sort of element from the English guy, you know, the Quartermass Experiment guy who wrote that. That's what he's into, isn't it? That's what he's all about. And then what they've done is say kind of married that up with, like, you know, modern technology and stuff, and, you know, with the sort of subliminal stuff on the TV that'll suddenly activate this. So it's like a marrying up of these two things.
Why robots?
You definitely need robots in it, because that's modern technology. This guy, you know, he likes his puppets and stuff like that. I mean, don't forget, this guy invented the dead dwarf gag for a start. Didn't he? That's one of his things. So I just like it, because it's a marrying up of just craziness, absolute craziness. I mean, I can understand like people watching it like and thinking, well, what the fuck's going on? I watched it.
I took my eye off the ball a bit because I had to do a bit of work.
He was like, what's going on? What's happening?
He escapes. He goes to get his girlfriend, who's about to be experimented on. I'm not really sure what happens with Stonehenge and stuff. I don't know what happens with it.
At the end, what happens is he rescues Ellie.
Yeah.
Or what he thinks is Ellie.
Oh, it's too late.
What he does is, I mean, it's weird. I mean, he's walking past people doing that old trick, kind of pushing something along with them. Do you know what I mean?
So the god
don't say it. I mean, they are robots, I guess. So what he does is get loads of the silver shamrock sort of, the signs that have been on the mass or whatever, and chucks it over everybody, and this activates sort of the advert and the Stonehenge thing, which shoots lasers into Cochrane's face, turns him a little bit blue, and makes him disappear.
This is where I look back up and Stonehenge is like kind of there, and there's just these blue lasers circling all of these technicians. And Cochrane's like, oh no, I'm done for now. And then he escapes. Yeah.
He gives him a little sarcastic clap, doesn't he? As if he's being booked.
Yeah. Well done.
Well done, yeah.
So he's about to get in his car with Ellie, and turns out she's one of the robots. She starts trying to kill him. So he knocks her head off.
Yeah.
But why can he overpower the robots? He's the only man that can overpower these robots. I accept that the robots exist. Mm-hmm. Why are the robots killing and chasing adults?
Right, because they've chased the guy at the start because he's unearthed this conspiracy, hasn't he, to kill all the children of the United States.
I'm telling you now, not a single person would believe him if he went back and said
definitely not. They really wouldn't believe him, would they? But that's why they've done that. That's why they've done that, for sure. It does get really like slapsticky and stuff like that. He hits Ellie, doesn't he? Knocks her head off or whatever.
Yeah.
One of her arms are in there. That gets him.
So that's
around the neck.
So he knocks her head off and she's like lying. Her body's face down on the floor and the eyes are still like twitching. It's like, it's quite comical. And then he gets in the car and he doesn't realize that one of her arms is attached to the car door. It's been pulled off.
Yeah.
And then it like goes through his throat and he just peels the fingers off one by one from his throat. And then when he throws the arm away, it's one of the greatest things I've ever seen. It like goes in slow motion. It's one of those where there's like a ding and this arm just kind of, and he throws it about like 2 meters away. It's like, it's not far at all.
And then we get another one where the body of Ellie attacks him.
Oh, fucking hell.
So, I mean, they must know that this is like humorous and ridiculous, don't they? They must. But here's the thing. Do you think that she was a robot all the way through?
Yeah, that's what I thought.
You know what I mean? Because for one, she's shagging Tom Atkins.
Yeah, right? Instantly.
Instantly. She's brought the lunge. She's not behaving like a normal person.
Yeah.
And at the end, when he does throw the silver shamrock labels on everybody, she does absolutely nothing to stop her, does she? She's still as if she's a robot being programmed just to kind of accompany Tom Atkins all the way through.
Yeah.
So I think she's been a
robot. That's what I thought at the end. That's not the very end, is it?
No.
The very end is one of the best endings of anything I've ever seen.
That's class. And they try to get Tommy Lee Wallace to take it out as well, I think.
Did they?
Yeah, And it's the best bit, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes you watch a film like this and it just ends. Like, if it just ended with them sorted it out, I would have been very disappointed, but no, he ends up screaming down the phone at someone.
So what he tries to do is to obviously get it taken off the Charles, doesn't he? Before he does this, actually, I found this bit really funny. He tries to ring his wife from the factory and tell her to, you know, get the mass away from the kids.
Yeah.
And she just loses her temper. Yeah, she loses her temper. Go to hell. You're drunk again.
You're drunk. You've abandoned your kids and you've got you're in a motel with a woman that you met a day ago. And you're telling me to take this off the kids. You shout at them. So you start ringing TV networks to tell them to take the ads off.
Uh-huh. And he manages to get two taken off. I think there's three channels at the time in America, but there's still one going, isn't there?
Yeah, and it's playing. And it's just, it's actually brilliant. It's like cutting between his angry face really close up on the phone and the Halloween pumpkin. And he just keeps going, stop it! 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 Stop it!
Yeah, it's class.
Honestly, Garth Marenghi's Dark Place might as well just be taken from this film alone. Like every single thing in it. Like if Matt Berry's character isn't based on Tom Atkins, I'd be very surprised.
Yeah, I think you're right there. I think you're right. But I mean, overall, it's just complete batshitness. It's just mental. But I just love it because it's mental. I think what saves it is Dean Cundey saves it because it looks great, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And John Carpenter's music saves it as well, I think.
For me, it's not focused, but I did very much enjoy it. I love that the actors in it are like these kind of character actors. Playing this, just these ridiculous roles, like as if it's like Laurence Olivier type of thing. Like I just thought it was really good playing it with like real serious like gravity to it, even though they're talking about snakes coming out of like people's mouths and stuff like that because of Stonehenge. But yeah, I thought it was great. Like I'm like, you know, there's probably a million podcasts out there about Halloween 1 and Halloween 2 and probably not this one. So, you know me, I'm always happy to watch these things that are undervalued or underwatched.
If people haven't seen it, they should watch it. It's a complete ride, isn't it? It's just nuts.
If you're having, I mean, obviously aren't going to be like many parties and stuff for Halloween this year, but if you are still wanting to celebrate Halloween, in whatever that means, and like, you know, have a few beers, get dressed up, and put a film on with some friends around. This is a great thing to watch. Uh-huh. There's one bit in it where I think he's saying like, turn the right at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Oh, he's in a bar, surprisingly. I mean, he's obviously his local bar because it's where
he's the greatest man in the world, isn't he, Cliff?
I mean, it's where the daughter comes to find him, doesn't she? That's where the alarm bell started ringing for me. Because why would she go and find a doctor that wasn't even involved in the thing whatsoever?
Yeah, I know, that's true,
So she goes to find him, he's in this bar, and the guy's, the advert comes on, he tells the barman to turn it off, and he goes, what's the matter? Got no Halloween spirit? Like, that's not a thing.
He just goes, No,
it's not a thing. Anyway, so that's it. Should watch it.
But I'm sure with Tom Atkins is like a guy throughout like the 80s and that who popped up in horror films. He's like a very culty guy and stuff. I'm sure we'll do Night of the Creeps and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Which you'll
this director,
enjoy.
He did Fright Night 2, didn't he?
TV series,
the Tim Curry one, did that.
Yeah, aye. So I mean, I just watch it. It's batshit crazy, but just watch it because it's
absolutely.
That's what I'd say.
You got a quiz or out?
I do.
Oh, I did.
So because obviously Michael Myers was absent from this film, so I've got you a Michael Myers quiz.
Okay, I'm not going to get any.
Some you'll get right. Some are like what? Yeah, you might. Some are like the questions that you ask me.
Okay.
So
You
deserve it. Yeah. What is Michael Myers' middle name? Now think of the scariest middle name you could possibly think of, Cliff, and you'll get the answer right.
Really?
It's a scary middle name.
Demonicus.
Ooh, it's a nice middle name. But the answer is Audrey.
Why is it? Okay.
Yeah, Okay. Audrey. Fancy being killed by someone with the middle name of Audrey. Michael Myers has three aliases, right? Can you tell me what they are? I think you might get one.
The Shape is one of them.
The Shape's one. Well, it's the Boogeyman.
Okay.
And the last one is the best one. Evil on two legs. Ooh, evil on two legs.
Here he comes, evil on two legs.
Oh, here he is. Again, that Audrey fella.
He is evil on two legs, that lad.
I tell you what, that lad there. Don't let him in with your sister.
That's tickled us.
All right, okay. His famous mask is actually a resprayed mask of who?
William Shatner.
It is, yes, William Shatner. And this is going to be a guesstimate.
Okay.
How many people has Michael Myers killed over the course of all the Halloween films, do you think?
Before I answer, can I just say thank you for introducing the word guesstimate into the podcast. It's been a long time since I've heard it. And
I don't particularly like it. But it was the first thing in my head, so I said it.
Over the course of all of the Halloween films, of which I'm not sure how many there are, how many people does he kill? 183.
Ooh, it's 89.
Is it?
It's not as prolific as he.
I thought he was more prolific.
Think.
Oh, well.
What is the name of the town where Halloween is set?
Shit. I can't remember. I can't remember.
Can't remember. It's Haddonfield in Illinois.
Damn.
I thought you'd get that. There you go. Sorry. Then. So that's all right.
I got two, I think.
I mean, the quiz isn't just for you.
Well, before we introduce the music, I did want to say that obviously we always tell people to like get in touch on Twitter and Facebook and rate the podcast and, you know, have a chat with us and suggest anything that you would think we should talk about and all that kind of stuff. And we've got some, like, you know, we've made some kind of good friends and stuff like that from doing it over the internet. So as always, follow us on Twitter at @FCircusPod. Facebook is the name of the podcast. You can listen to us on wherever you want, really, but Apple's the main one people listen to. So if you do listen to on Apple Podcasts, rate it and give us a review if you wouldn't mind so much. The other thing I was going to say is, like, we keep getting requests for people to be on the podcast, which is great. We've had Katie, who we mentioned last week, wants to come on and talk about Prisoner Cell Block H. Davey is a lad from Shields, who's covered a lot. He wants to talk about stuff. It'd be good to have him on. Ian Albroth Mackham, who's on the other podcast we mentioned last week, who's all, you know, and others have been in touch asking if they can be on for whatever reason. And what I would say is, like, this is a really personal podcast for me and Brett to do. Like, it's we kind of do it not so much to do a podcast, but just to talk to each other once a week because we obviously live halfway across the world. But we do want to, we had our mate Dan on before, so I think we will have some guests on every now and then when we talk about stuff, especially if somebody requests something that we're interested in doing or we think it fits in with what we're doing. So we will do that. So bear with us. We'll get in touch with people who want to do it. Not sure where we'll go next. We've got a few lined up for certain ones that we want to hit. The 50th episode and stuff. On the subject of guests, I've mentioned before, I wanted our friend Nobby, Paul Stubbs, to be on the 50th episode where we're going to talk about a big trip that we made back in the day. I think he was a major part of. He messages this week out of the blue, haven't heard from him for about 3 years, with some memories of when we were younger. And I said, well, why don't you come on the podcast? I know Brett's asked you. And he said, I've told Brett I'm too introverted for that.
He didn't say that, like, he must have been thinking of that reply for a while before he said it back.
I said, well, you're only talking to me and Brett. Anyway,
he should definitely come on. Him and Reedy should come on.
Yeah, I know. Well, I'm naming and shaming Nobby now for, for, I don't know, being weak. A weak man? Is that what I'm saying he is?
Well, he certainly was on that trip.
Well, needs to come on and give his own side of the story. Anyway, that's for the 50th episode, which we're about 10 episodes away from.
Of course it does.
But yeah, so keep the requests coming and we'll definitely be in touch to sort out some guest spots or some appearances when we talk about some of that stuff. But in the meantime, we have some music to listen to, which is very fitting for this episode.
So what we've got this week is a guy who's a dark synth producer from Nottingham, and they're called Ectoplague.
Yeah.
And this is, I like this. I was talking to the guy yesterday. I said I got John Carpenter sort of vibes from it and stuff like that. And he was pretty happy with that. Have you listened to it?
Yeah, I have, and I agree. I mean, it's obviously, like we were saying last week, it's been created in with that in mind, really, or this kind of film in mind. And certainly the name of the film, the song, rather, The Crescent Heights Slasher, certainly fits in with that. I think it's great, and it'll probably have started playing right about now, so we'll say goodbye, because it kicks in about 10 seconds. So, goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
This is Ectoplague with The Crescent Heights Slasher. See you later, Brett. See you later, everyone. Enjoy the music, and stop it! Stop it! Stop it!